Welcome to Empower Your Life with the Enneagram with Dr. David Daniels, the program that will develop your own self-awareness and strengthen relationships with all of those around you. Now, enlightening you with the Enneagram, here's Dr. David Daniels.
Hello and welcome to Voice America and to Bringing the Enneagram to Life. I'm your host, David Daniels. The Enneagram stands for a 9 personality styles. Ennea means 9 in Greek, and gram means a figure, something drawn. It's about 9 fundamental personality styles that describe the way we think, the way we feel, and the way we behave. So it gets right down to the fundamental way in which we organize ourselves, our basic coping strategy, our basic motivations, and to the way we organize attention, the perceptual filters over our heads, our hearts, and our bodies, so to speak, that define and limit the universe each of us lives in. And the work of the Enneagram, as we've been discussing, is to understand this and to become a better self-observer so that you can work with these constrictions that we have in the way we perceive the world and expand our life, get out of the box, so to speak, and live a more full life, and to also understand others as they are to themselves. So we're moving today to the hearts, we're moving today to the body center of intelligence. Remember, there's 3 centers of intelligence. We've already had the programs on the mental center and the heart or emotional center of intelligence, and now we're moving to the body center of intelligence. In the body center of intelligence, it tells us about what's our relation to the environment. Where's power? Where's control? Our proprioceptive fibers, our kinesthetics tell us about, is our environment ranged in the right way? Is it ranged in a comfortable way? How do we feel, or how do we sense the way things should be in the world? And remember, we all have all 3 of these intelligences, so this is just a lead system for these types. And we start with the core type of the 3 body types, type 9, or the mediator. And we have 3 representatives today, 3 panelists, Chris, Charlene, and Judith, to represent the particular type, the 9 on the Enneagram, the core type of the body types. So to introduce this type, to give you an overview, I'm going to give the basic structure of the type and its core coping strategy, what we call the basic proposition. The original state of blissful union and unconditional love and regard, which hopefully every infant experiences in the beginning, goes into the background because this child experiences that the world either says, no, you're not really important, or you need to blend in. The blend in is the more common of the two. So the child comes to believe that in order to be of value in the world and also to have the other fundamental needs of love and security met, you have to sort of forget yourself. You have to put in substitutes for who you are and go out into the environment and blend into the environment and seek, instead of your own position in the world, seek comfort and belonging as a substitute. Seek participation in the world, or seek union with someone else in the world. And that's the way you're going to survive. It's a really go-along and get-along strategy. And your energy is pulled into all sorts of claims that the environment makes upon you, and attention goes out and spreads out to the multiple claims, some of them essential, some of them inessential, that will help you get along in the world in this go-along, get-along style. The energy is called inertia towards self because you pretty much forget yourself, and you can see everybody else's opinion and points of view, and you're not very good at seeing your own because you're pulled by these claims out there. And your deep concern underneath, that can be quite non-conscious, is that somehow or other, if you stood up for yourself, you wouldn't be worth keeping. You wouldn't be worth having around, you'd be just dismissed, so to speak. It's not conscious, but it's like, if I'm for myself, I'll lose the world. And I don't want to do that. The path back, so to speak, is to reclaim that sense of a personal self, a love for oneself that's equal to every other person in the world. Not greater than, not lesser than, but equal. So I'd like to turn to our panel now and ask you, what does this bring up, this basic proposition, this basic structure? What themes does it bring up for you? Judith?
The first one that comes to mind is the importance of avoiding conflict at all costs, because that could lead to being abandoned or being tossed out, or it would just create an enormous amount of chaos in other people's lives if I thought that I wanted something for myself and that it would end in conflict.
Wow. Now, of course, there's conflict is like part of life. So how do you deal with that?
It's certainly a lot better now since being involved with the Enneagram. But earlier in my young adult life, the problem was I was a good mommy and I was sweet to my children and I was always there for them and took care of them. And then if I had one of my sons crossed some very obvious boundary to me and I needed to put my foot down, I would be angry because he was pushing me to conflict, and conflict was a place not to go.
What is the feel got you into this habit of mind that made conflict so bad?
Just a childhood of not being very important. Not having not being in a home where I felt valued or important.
So the strategy was to blend in, and then you'd...
By blending in, then, and staying under the radar and not having needs and just being sweet and cute, then everybody...
Right, and sort of outside yourself, then seeking comfort, seeking something from the outside to affirm you.
Right, and that would be, you know, being the teacher's pet at school and being sweet to all my friends. And
right. Good. So how about yourself, Charlene?
Yeah, I'm actually from a large family, one of 10 children, and it was very important in the family to fit in and to keep chaos to a minimum, and to you were recognized for good behavior by fitting in and following the rules and being part of the mass. And like Judith, you know, I was very popular because I took on the characteristics of everyone else. Their personality became my personality. I became their personality. I allowed their personality to merge to mine. So I had very few opinions of my own because I assumed everyone else's opinion, and I could value every opinion that I heard. And it, as I look back now after studying with the Enneagram work, is I had no opinion. I just had an amalgam of everyone else's opinion.
Right. And, well, you felt the strategy was important because you were just a member of this very large family and you needed to kind of go along and get along?
It was, I would go as far as saying it was survival. You know, to be part of that functioning group, these were the rules that were established. Silent rules, by the way. Nothing, you know, very overt about that. But it was my part of fitting in and being a part. And actually, my recognition came from being a good person that did what I was supposed to do.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it worked. As a child, get along, mm-hmm. you know, be successful, but not striving for success, but to fit in and to be the good girl.
That's great.
Right. Chris, how about yourself? What's the themes here?
Well, one that you talked about was the claims from the outside world, and that's been a great challenge for me in my life, because it's been difficult to prioritize the very important from the somewhat important to the not very important at all. And the challenge has been, why are they important? They all seem to have equal weight, and that ability to discern and take that inside and really see it has been very difficult for me. Mm-hmm. So I feel it's easy for me to fit into a wide range of situations, but it's difficult for me to know, and it has been for me to know what it is I need and want for myself.
One of the things that's true about the gut center of intelligence in particular is that it's telling us about how we are and how we fit in the environment, just like you're saying. And anger tells us when something is violating us, or the environment isn't the way we feel is comfortable or it ought to be. So what happens? What will get you angry, and how does that show up?
For me, I guess what gets me angry is someone making me take a stand on something, and maybe I'm not ready to, or being pushed into that place of conflict. And it shows up as passive-aggressive behaviors, usually, because overt anger is too uncomfortable.
No, that's a kind of clinical term, passive-aggressive. Would you give? What do you mean by?
Stubborn, subtle little signals that this isn't going to go anywhere.
Kind of dig in your heels?
Dig in your heels, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then maybe a little sarcasm here and there in a friendly way.
Mm-hmm. In a friendly way. Friendly sarcasm. I see.
Right. Yes.
How about you, Charlene?
I can be condescending. Mine comes out in a way that I am very condescending with people. And that usually is a result of, I have agreed with you. I am with you. How can you now be arguing or having a little conflict with me because I've been agreeing with you all the time? And so then I'll turn it back into one of being condescending. And I can actually feel it in my body. I can feel my face get red and my jaw get tight. And I can't get my face to unredden. And so I would not be good in a game of poker because you would be able to read me in that situation.
Right. And will you also kind of dig in your heels?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. When it's something that I finally believe is very important, I'm a mountain to move.
Right. Mm-hmm. But as a mediator, ordinarily it's go along and get along. But then when something actually affects you and there is this real person inside, you resist it in some way.
That's right.
You don't come right out and say it. You may not even know it, but you resist it.
That's right. And I'm sure it's very confusing for other people when most of the time they see me very amiable and going along, and without a very good trigger or a good explanation of what's happening in me, I'm sure I confuse other people about why is she now taking a stance? Like, what is it? And sometimes I might not know at that moment either.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Chris, how about yourself?
What'll get me going is people telling me what to do when I don't want to do it. And I might not even know it right at the time, but there's enough times when that does come up, I don't like it at all.
Right.
And I do not like being manipulated either. If I can sense somebody's trying to drive to a different agenda, that will get me going.
And how does get you going? What does that mean? You know.
Well, it can mean two ways. One is I'll look at you and nod yes. But that doesn't mean anything. It means I'm going the other way. Thank you very much. At other times, I can be very forceful in my expression of anger. You will clearly know it.
Right. But often it's the first move is to resist it.
Resist it. And it's clear when the resistance is there.
Right. And you can feel it in your body. I don't want to lead you on here too much, but it's sort of body-based sense.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I kept wondering what everybody talking about when they're saying, well, you got to be in your body. And I'm thinking, well, where else can you be?
Uh-huh. Right.
I've come to learn that there's people feel it in a different way. Mm-hmm. So I clearly feel it in my body, and it feels very organic and forceful.
Right. So how about your own agenda, so to speak, your own priorities, with all the response to the claims of the environment and other people, what happens inside you about what your priorities are and your needs?
They are very hard to discern, if one even gets around to trying to discern them. And it's very easy to get distracted and pulled to other people's priorities. So for myself or a nine, the whatever's going on around me can take my attention with a lot of enthusiasm. I'll do a lot. At the end of the day, I might notice that I never got to anything that I would have set out to do as a priority.
So you start out, but then something pulls you off?
Start out with an idea of what I'd like to get done. It's not usually highly specific because there's some aspect of myself that leaves the opening for the distraction mm-hmm. and to be pulled by other priorities.
Have you got an example how a day might go?
Well, there may be, a basic one, I think, would be about paying bills or something like that and planning to sit down at the desk and pay bills, which is something that I know has to be done. And the internet is a nightmare for nines because I can get on my computer to pay the bills and anything can trigger curiosity or maybe the desire to go look at something else. And then not just that kind of distraction, but distractions in the home or the office about, what do we have for dinner? Maybe I'll go cook something wonderful and that'll be a lot of fun, and I'll get up and maybe make the list and go through a few cookbooks and then go to the store and bring it all home and start the prepping, and it's a wonderful dinner and the bills didn't get paid, but tomorrow.
Right. And just kind of get pulled in by these claims from outside, the internet claims, or somebody wants the dinner, et cetera. Let's see. Thank you. And yourself, Charlene?
Yeah, I might start with an example of something that might be helpful. I'm currently in a transformation from a job perspective, and I want to get a job, but I don't want to get a job. So I'm ambiguous about that. And I have an opportunity where this company would like to interview me, and I don't want to go. And I know that I'm going to have conflict on the other end of that phone call. But I know I have a responsibility to call him. And I was delighted this week when I was able to call him and get his voicemail. Because then I didn't have to, I could at least do my responsibility, but I didn't have to actually have the tough conversation that says, I'm not interested right now.
Right. Well, what would be the matter with the tough conversation?
That conflict piece is very hard for me. Right. It's very hard. I feel it in my body, and I think, the person I'm talking to, they must be feeling it as well. Right. It's really difficult for me.
Like you might, I know I'm leading you here a little mm-hmm. bit, but it's like in the conflict, you might lose the other person. That if you stand up for something, if you stand up for A and they want B, you might lose your contact.
That's right. I mean, I wouldn't be fitting in at that point in time. It goes back to that the basic proposition. At that point in time, they might shun me, abandon me, not like me, and that would feel very uncomfortable.
Right. So, of all the types on the Enneagram, the mediator type 9 is the most referenced out there in the world, and you have the hardest time referencing to yourself, mm-hmm. and then when you get there, you still have a hard time, because then it might create conflict.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And Chris?
For me, it's a challenge, a personal challenge, to set my priorities. I have to be very diligent to set my A, B, and C priorities every day, and then really stay on track. Like, the A priorities need to get done, but it might look like, well, I've got to start this report, so I go into the computer and I pick up a previous one that looks similar. Next thing you know, oh, I need to rearrange my directory structure. Next thing you know, oh yeah, I had to transfer those files to my laptop. And it just have to be on guard for that at all times. I get distracted easily. Big challenge.
So, of course, this has a lot to do, we'll come back to it, with the whole path of development, which is making your own wants, needs, and desires and priorities, what's important to you, equal to other people's, not more than or less than, but that's really a task. So how does your type affect, you know, vital relationships? What do you bring to a relationship that really is good, and what are the blessings?
I think the good part is that I'm very available, adaptable, easily, it's easy for me to see another person's point of view, and I can bring a lot of caring and understanding in that way. So I think those are sort of the basics for me.
I bring a ton of love. I mean, I come from a place of love, so I bring that, and with that I bring compassion and kindness until challenged. And I can be a very good listener.
And Chris?
Probably great stability, foundation, really good in crisis, anything that requires steadiness while intensity is playing out.
Right. You know, my partner of many, many years, actually we've been together 49 years, is a Mediator 9, and all these things that you mentioned of the qualities I experience, you know, that she's incredibly loving. She's very supportive. She's steady. She's very accountable and trustworthy. And she is wonderful with children. It's like she has this ability to relate to little children, children of all ages, with this remarkable skill. And it's the whole deal that's enriched our relationship is now she's gotten also her own inner self more firmly in place, and that's, you know, an augmentation, or it's a balancing. So so this is the challenge, is not the love and the care and the steadiness. It's like bringing yourself into the relationship, you know, who you really are. Can you speak to that, or each of you?
Sure.
Judith.
I've always gone in the direction, been drawn to personal development things that were things I didn't really need, like to be more caring or be more calm or be just all these things that are just organic with me. And the challenge is to be present within myself, to give myself permission to hold the center.
Right. Take some workshops in sort of radical assertiveness.
Yes. Yes.
Making you number one or something of that
nature.
Right. The challenge for you in relationship, Charlene.
I can merge with the other person and take on their personality and lose myself. Another thing is when asked for an opinion about a movie or a restaurant or whatever, it'll be whatever. And that's a little bit unfair also, because I do have some opinions about what I don't want to do, but I don't have a lot of opinions about what I do want to do. And so it's a test that sometimes the partner doesn't pass.
Right. And, you know, there's something that's important to at least start with, I know what I don't want, mm-hmm. and express that, and that help you get along the path of what I do want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would second that, because in my relationship, it's very important for me to know what her priorities are, what's important. And I want to be a nurturer too, you know. I mean, it's funny that you actually deprive us of you. I don't know if you've thought of it that way, but it's very significant.
I hadn't thought of it that way until you're just saying it, but I could see that. I could feel that even.
Right. And the challenge for you, Chris, in the relationship?
It's bringing my personal self into the relationship. It's been an enormous challenge. Partially, I mean, it caused in part the loss of my first marriage. Mm-hmm. That inability to do that consistently.
Right. And how did that adversely affect that relationship?
The inability to clearly know what was important to me in a prioritized way and stand on that created a huge difficulty in the marriage.
Right. So you'd like go down the path that you really didn't want to go down, and then that would cause ultimately some disruption.
Yes, that's a kind way to call it. Yeah.
Well, what would you call it?
I'd call it an eruption.
Oh, eruption. Okay. Yes, there's a difference. So I want to move on to what is the Enneagram meant to you, and how has it been useful in your lives? Maybe we could even start out with Chris this time.
Well, the Enneagram has proved to be very useful in clarifying to me my own self and how it is I move through the world. I think that's probably the most important part. And it's naturally given me insight as to how other people behave in the world, which has allowed for a much greater sense of understanding.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good, thank you.
So the personal work, especially not once feeling comfortable with my type and understanding who I was and what I was doing, has allowed for some awareness that I haven't seen before. But secondly, we brought it into the business environment with my leadership team, where we went through the typing exercise and knowledge associated with that. And what we would find in projects, there was some predictability about how long it would take for a project to be completed, what the level of perfectionism had to be, who was going to be our steady Eddie when it came to helping keep us on track and things like that. So I found great value in understanding the other types of the people who worked with me, because it made us much more effective. And, oh, by the way, it raised the level of self-awareness in the whole team.
Thank you. And for you, Judith?
I've especially valued the whole spectrum that's available, and within this type, that it's not just about some kind of pathology, that there's the good and then there's the not so good, and that those things are just one ninth of the whole picture, and that there are other people who view the world this way and who struggle with the same issues and who bring the same gifts, and just the picture of how we all interrelate with other types is so exquisite, and it's quite a gift.
We'll be right back to Empower Your Life with the Enneagram with host Dr. David Daniels.
Information you need, when you need it. VoiceAmerica.com. What is this wonderful and effective self-help system known as the Enneagram? The Enneagram tells us why we feel, think, and behave the way we do. And most importantly, it tells us how to become our best self in all domains of life. We introduce to you the Trifold School of Enneagram Studies. Our training program has the highest standards in its field, with remarkable records of trained, skilled professionals. The Trifold School of Enneagram Studies includes the Enneagram Professional Training Program, business training, consultations, classes in integration of psychology and spiritual life. For more information on our products, training, and classes, go online to www.AuthenticEnneagram.com or call toll-free at 1-866-366-8973. Change your life today with the Trifold School of Enneagram Studies.
Hello, this is Rory Garay, President of Greyhound Pets of America and host of Greyhounds Made Great Pets on Voice America. Join me every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific and 2 p.m. Eastern for an insightful and enjoyable talk about one of man's best friends, the Greyhound. Learn about the history of the Greyhound, discuss proper obedience and training techniques, and find out more about the Greyhound racing industry and what they are doing to help the adoption effort of the former race dog. If you own a Greyhound or just love dogs like I do, join me for Greyhounds Make Great Pets every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
In the spirit of Have Couch, Will Travel, Dr. Carol Lieberman creates a haven of sanity in an increasingly insane world. Each day we are bombarded with news of events that have never crossed our wildest nightmares. Society is spiraling out of control and everyone is reeling from it. But now there's an answer. The best way to keep sane in this insane world is to tune in to Dr. Carol's Couch on Voice America. Dr. Carol, a certified media psychiatrist, will broadcast live from her Beverly Hills office every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time. Call or log in and get help with whatever is sending you reeling whenever you need a soothing voice to calm and advise you. That's Dr. Carol's Couch every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
Go beyond success and discover a deeper meaning to life. Join host Jeffrey Gitterman and his guests, the premier thought leaders in business, politics, science, spirituality, and culture, who have reached the pinnacle of financial and professional attainment in their fields, only to discover a profound lack of fulfillment with what our culture defines as success. So won't you tune in every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific time to Jeffrey Gitterman and Beyond Success, redefining the meaning of prosperity, right here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
Have you put down the morning paper in disgust because they weren't reporting what you wanted to read? Have you wondered why there aren't more women's voices in the news? Well, so have I, and we're about to change that. This is former Minnesota State Senator Ember Reichstadt Young. I hope you'll join me for a new radio show every Thursday all about women on the move. We'll look at what's missing in the news, the issues often ignored in mainstream media, like how does Social Security reform really affect women? Why is the Department of Labor proposing to stop collecting workforce data on women? What role will women play in Iraq's new government? We'll create that debate right here. The Ember Reichstadt Young Show will have prominent women you know and inspiring women you don't know. We'll share stories of women's leadership, courage, and vision. We just need you to be part of the conversation, so join us for the Ember Reichstadt Young Show every Thursday at 1 p.m. Central Time. It's all about you, women on the move, on voiceamerica.com.
Continuing to be the authority in Internet Talk Radio, you're listening to voiceamerica.com.
We now return to Empower Your Life with the Enneagram with Dr. David Daniels.
What would you recommend for, let's say, a young nine, a young mediator that wanted to get on the path of development? What would be something you'd recommend?
To get clear about what their own priorities are, to learn to read the internal signals, and to become aware of the blending in that can happen and the giving away of attention.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'd say take a stance. Find a partner that you're comfortable with, a friend or a partner, and let them know the work that you're working on and invite them to challenge you to take a stance and actually have some healthy conflict. Role play it, work it a little bit so that you can see in conflict it actually generates healthy feelings as well as different kinds of outcomes than what you had anticipated. So I would say take a stance and practice.
Mm-hmm. Right. I say spend some time with yourself and find out what really personally matters to you. Mm-hmm. Not to the outside world, but to you.
You know, it's such great advice. It's like if we just take our own advice sometimes, it'd be, you know, like a miracle. Well, that goes for all of us, yeah. Regardless of the type. So how can we support your development, other people in your life?
Nines take things in through their bodies. So just because they don't say something right away doesn't mean it's not affecting them. So you have to have the patience to sit with the nine while they cycle through.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think it would be fun for someone who really knows you to challenge you a little bit to say, is that your opinion or is that my opinion? And, you know, have a little fun with it so that you become much more aware of how much you're going in and taking on the other personality. So I think that would be kind of fun, and I'll look forward to that in my relationship.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think it would be a good idea for partners of nines to be aware of supporting any agenda that the nine can come up with, and certainly not taking over the process or responsibility for it, but really encouraging the focus on following through.
Right. That's great. You know, I feel that's what you've just been saying is my task and my relationship with the nine is, you know, sometimes she'll say, well, would you like to go on a hike today? You know, and I might go, no, I'm not interested. You know, like, but I need to learn, okay, would you like to go on a hike today? It's so hard to self-reference. So I need to be tuned to, you know, what's important to you. And like you say, give you a little time to respond. You know, I say this a little tongue-in-cheek, but I also believe it's true that the nines are the most powerful type on the whole Enneagram circle, because when you really don't want to do something, when something's really offending to this person that's actually in there, you can't move a nine. You know, you can really dig in your heels. Now you're smiling. I hear some smile though. And you're also so steady and so, you know, gracious. But would you speak to this?
I love power. So that feels wonderful to me. I just didn't realize how much I had. And when you assume somebody else's personality or opinion, it's more opinion, you think you really are giving up yourself. And so I didn't have this awareness until, again, working with the Enneagram to understand. So mm-hmm. I like how that makes me feel.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Judith, what about this power thing, you know?
Well, it's a confusing one for me, but I'm beginning to understand it, that there certainly is a lot of power in just being there and not moving. Mm-hmm. But there's more power there that's a little more constructive.
Right. You know, power, how does the old saying go? Power ennobles or power corrupts? Doesn't necessarily, it can be a very positive force, and it may not be. So in your own relationship, what happens when you don't want to, when you really don't want to do something? Or you want to do something?
When I don't want to do something, I just either work it so it never happens or gets done. I can say yes, I'd be glad to do that, and I just manage to forget it.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels genuine. I genuinely forgot
right.
it.
Right. Now, in the more enlightened you'd actually speak up, right?
Right. The more enlightened me says, that really doesn't work, or let's talk about it, or I'm not willing to do that.
You know, it's so amazing, because from the outside, when you speak up with what's really vital and important to you, I want to be responsive to it. I think others want to be responsive to it. It's very easy for the nine to slip into somewhat of a victim position, you know, like the world has got all the power, and not experience your own positive power. So it's a big step of personal development. Makes a huge difference. It's like, well, maybe we really want to honor you. So, good. It's time to turn to our audience for some questions. Yes, Anne?
It seems like, and this is a little bit of a segue from what you're talking about right now, but I hear a lot about going along, and then the far side, the other side of the continuum, where then you evoke power, or you have an eruption. What's in between? How have you used the in between? Because mediation is such a powerful word, and Dave's talking about this being a powerful type. So how does that work in life? What parts of your life do you call that to action in?
Great question. The mediation quality.
So I feel like the world is pretty gray, as you would expect from a nine, and so the extremes don't happen that much for me, and so I probably live the majority of my time in that in between stage, adjusting. So it's just a small sample, and because I'm going through some of this awareness maybe for the first time now, I'm going to have to pay a little more attention to when I am, you know, being stubborn and having a stronger opinion, and see if I can catch that in my body sooner so that I can talk a little bit more about it. But I live in a pretty gray world.
My experience is that the mediation comes up most of the time. But when I feel something deeply personal and I have a strong feeling about it, it's unmovable.
One more question, if we could.
Hi, I'm Louise. This is a comment that I'd like to make and then ask you for your reaction. I'm actually so appreciative of what you had to say, and I'm now sad, too, because it seems to me that there are a number of people whom I would know who have been labeled by themselves or by others as ADD or ADHD when really they're nines. They're capable, they're loving, but they're just highly distracted in their work as they move through life. Can you comment on that at all, or what that does for you?
I don't know what the correlation is, really, and I don't know if the quality or flavor of distraction is the same. But there's certainly some children in school looking out the window and not being able to focus for one reason or another. And a lot of us who are drawn to the claims made on us by the environment. It could be that. It could also be other from other sources.
The nine, you know, tends not to be hyperactive, certainly distractible. And I don't know that any study has been done yet to, you know, verify any relationship there, but certainly not the hyperactivity, frenetic kind of quality.
Right, it's a different...
Nines can sit with stuff for quite a while, but I think some teachers might say, oh, this kid's distractible. Maybe it's this attention deficit disorder. So we need to bring the session to a close. I want to thank our panel, our exemplars, for coming and expressing, you know, from yourself what it's like. Our whole narrative tradition is about the types, about people speaking for themselves rather than being told from the outside. It's from the inside out, and I really appreciate that.
Hello,
yes.
Cindy, and I want to thank the panel for sharing so much of themselves. My question relates to children specifically. Would daydreaming be a strong characteristic of a nine child?
It wasn't for me when I was a child. Mine had to do more with people, and my distraction had to do more with people around me and interesting things that caught my attention, but I wasn't a daydreamer.
I don't remember.
You might have called me aloof as compared to a daydreamer in that in some ways I was trying to avoid a difficult situation, so I might have been a bit more aloof, but I would not classify it as daydreaming.
It's certainly a very interesting question, because the nine is being pulled by claims of the environment, and the tension is going there. I'm not off daydreaming about what I want to do and what I'd like to do. That's some other habit of mine. Not that nines don't ever daydream, not that the mediator never daydreams, but it's not in the habit. It's like something's calling me to do, you know, whether the plant needs to be watered all of a sudden or something is happening. So it's not the classic daydreaming type. Would you concur?
I agree.
That's my experience. Mm-hmm. It's not a daydream.
So we have another question.
My name is Steve, and as the spouse of a nine, like you, David, I was sitting here thinking about this stubbornness that we were hearing about and wondering, you know, how to approach a nine about something that needs to get done. Judith mentioned the bills, for example. You know, I get anxious about things being paid on time. So how could I, as a spouse of a nine, approach a nine and sort of get what I need without getting the stubbornness reaction?
Well, one thing we do in our home is have an agreement. We have a weekly business meeting, and we go out for coffee, and we take our folders with us, and we talk about what is going to be done that week, and who's accountable, who's responsible for what, and what the commitment is about deadlines.
So then
that really
this,
works for us.
Right, and then you have this paper trail. So
yes,
you come back the next week,
exactly.
And there's this accountability built into it. Pretty clever. Well,
I'd say just put it on the radar screen. Don't sneak up on you, and make sure that we know when stuff's coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and finally, mine would be, I like a plan. You know, I like a plan because then it's predictable and I know what to do, and you can, by having a plan together, it means you're valuing my opinion. And so if you get me, I guess there's that old, you know, if you're going to have me on the landing, you better have me on the takeoff as well. And so I guess that's how I would describe it.
It's great. You know, this is one of the things, there's each of the types, there's certain myths. And the myth about nines is that somehow they don't get things done or they're lazy people. And that's just totally wrong. There's a self-forgetting quality, as we've heard, but nines can be highly productive people that get an enormous amount done, and you know, their service can be really big to the others in their life and to what their commitments are. But could you speak to that? You know, like
if I may, I can get a lot of other people to get stuff done too with this nine behavior, because I am listening to them and getting the information from them and hearing them and saying, that's a great opinion, let's go get it done. And I actually don't have to do the work myself, so I can get them to do it. So sometimes it's less about the work I get done, and it's more about the work I get done through other people.
Right. And you can see all the things that need to get done.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Right.
I share that same skill, and I'm also very capable of getting enormous amounts of things done. The distractibility is more of a personal nature, and it doesn't extend to tasks that need accomplishing.
Right. Exactly. Thank you. We have one other question here.
This is Ann. I'm curious as to, maybe one or two of you could answer this question, what your primary career has been and how being a nine has helped you with that.
I'm a psychotherapist and family therapist, and I also work with hospice, and it helps a lot. I'm able to sit in a room with several people or a lot of people and really hold what is being said and what the different points of view are in the room, understand them, and help those people to understand each other.
I think it's a really good question, because I've been in sales and sales management, and it has allowed me to do strong inquiry with my customers and really understand their needs, understand their opinions as well, and you know, match what needed to be matched in terms of the solution that I was selling at the time. So I hadn't really thought about it before, but I think it's been one of the secrets to my success is my nineness.
I came out of construction. I'm not there any longer, but there's a lot of volatility in construction and construction workers. There's plenty of yelling and throwing things around. And so that mediator ability would come in handy on a very regular basis.
Mm-hmm. So I want to, it's about time for the end of our show today, and I want to thank our panel for being present, for Chris and Charlene and Judith, and really enlightening us about the nine or mediator habit of mind, and just conclude with this is the type that serves others, that blends into the world as a whole coping strategy, and we don't ever want to get rid of that, but the task of development has to come back and making one's own priorities, one's own agenda, one's own wants and needs of equal importance, so that it's really a both and, so that the world is served and that you are served. And not just the world, and then you ending up, because there is a you in there, resisting or getting stubborn, using that energy to come forward to what really matters to you, as well as to what really matters to others. I want to thank all of you, and we'll be moving on to type one, another one of the three body types in our next show, and we hope you'll all be back for that.
Thank you for listening to Empower Your Life with the Enneagram on VoiceAmerica.com. Join us every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for another informative hour of Empower Your Life with the Enneagram, right here on the network truly dedicated to your health, Voice America Health and Wellness.
What is this wonderful and effective self-help system known as the Enneagram? The Enneagram tells us why we feel, think, and behave the way we do. And most importantly, it tells us how to become our best self in all domains of life. We introduce to you the Trifold School of Enneagram Studies. Our training program has the highest standards in its field, with remarkable records of trained, skilled professionals. The Trifold School of Enneagram Studies includes the Enneagram Professional Training Program, business training, consultations, classes in integration of psychology and spiritual life. For more information on our products, training, and classes, go online to www.AuthenticEnneagram.com or call toll-free at 1-866-366-8973. Change your life today with the Trifold School of Enneagram Studies.